All right, third and final hour, Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex on 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. I'm Joe Rexroad, Connor Newt in today for Robbie Stanley. And as we do every Thursday at this time, happy to welcome in our friend Charles Robinson, covers the NFL for Yahoo Sports, and we are very interested today, Charles. And we can get into some other things, but we're probably going to hit you hard today on Titans coaching search, I guess, overall coaching search in this league. It's that time. Right. By the way, is this – like, how's this like this week for you and your job? Like, you know, how's this compare to some of the crazier weeks once you start getting these firings and interviews and everything?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be one of the worst weeks of the season because it's a league where there's 7-8 firings every single cycle now, and what GMs are going to go with it. And I have an AP vote that's due on Monday that kind of crashes into it pretty hard. So you're trying to get that done. You're trying to figure out what do I want to write about this stuff? Like, I'm not a big transactional, like, hey, this guy's going to go interview here, this guy's going to go interview there. I'm more along the lines of, let me try to understand what's going on now in this building and what's important. So, like, I just wrote about Pete Carroll being fired, but more sort of how everybody we've spent this last year really focusing on Tom Brady and, you know, Tom kind of having a mistake already with Chip Kelly, and how John Spytek now is going to be really going to be the guy in the building who's going to have the most influence on a day-to-day basis on, you know, Mark Davis, on whoever the incoming head coach is. And that basically, like, if the Raiders are getting rebuilt, people better start paying attention to this guy rather than just assuming that Tom Brady's going to be doing it from far away.
So on the Titans front, Charles, First of all, we I think, at least on this program, I can't speak for anybody else, but we have basically just dismissed the idea that John Harbaugh would even give a look toward Nashville. Am I off base on that? Is there a chance, Charles? We put it at 5% that he would even interview.
Well, he's definitely not going to interview with everybody, and I think he's going to get requests from everybody, and I definitely think he's gotten his agent's gotten some contact from a couple of teams that have head coaches in place right now. And I think just from a baseline, every time a coaching search starts, particularly when it starts for someone who is going to have a lot of options, you sit and you go, okay, let me look at the ownership, you know, situation. How stable has ownership been over the years? What's the support like? What are the finances inside the operation? You know, is everything all up to date technology wise? Is there any skimping that happens? Can you choose your entire coaching staff? Have they stayed out of meddling with those decisions? What's the front office look like? That's one thing with Harbaugh that I think is going to be important is, you know, it worked in Baltimore, between he and Eric DaCosta and obviously Ozzie Newsome prior to DaCosta, but, you know, over the years you would hear at times that John was a little frustrated that he wanted a little more influence in the front office. And, he got a consigliere at one point, you know, it kind of helped him have a little bit more input. I would presume where he chooses to go, he's going to want I think he'll want the 53, and I think he'll want some juice in the draft pick process as well. Like the players that are ultimately going to get selected. I don't know that he'll necessarily have to have final say on that. But I think I really truly believe he's going to want to have the 53. And then the quarterback situation. So I guess I would just say to Titans fans, you know, you sit down and look at it. And what frustrated Mike Vrabel and when he went out? What were the things that he did not like about the organization? I would say those would map pretty consistently with John Harbaugh. He's a similar personality to Mike. He coaches guys really hard. He can be difficult to be around at times. He's very good forward-facing, though. Like, not a lot of people, they all assume that, you know, Jim Harbaugh's the crazy one and John's the much more, you know, kind of jovial, you know, teddy bear. He's not at all. And, you know, so again, if Vrabel's leaving for a certain set of reasons that are frustrating him, and those reasons would presumably exist if John were to go in, then you probably would cross the Titans off the list. That's what I would presume. Now, I say that, and, you know, let's see how this all stacks up, because there might be other teams out there. I mean, I think the Giants would turn over everything to them. I think when you talk about teams that currently have head coaches, I wonder, you know, Stephen Ross went to Michigan. You know, obviously Jack Harbaugh coached there in the 70s for a number of years when John was going to Ann Arbor Pioneer. Jim, his brother, obviously coached Michigan. I think all the Michigan ties and Stephen Ross owning the Dolphins, I would not be surprised if Stephen Ross is not reaching out to an intermediary saying, hey, you know, we don't have a GM here right now. And I think a lot of John, and would this be something that he would potentially consider? The only problem is he's a massive problem on the roster right now with Tua. I mean, it's just from a salary cap standpoint, it looks pretty frightening. So for him to even take that job, I think he would have to get – they would fire Mike McDaniel. He'd have to get, you know, the 53 element of personnel control in what I think might even be helping to choose his general manager. And then, you know, it would have to be like a Sean Payton situation where you're like, okay, we're gonna pull the trigger on this quarterback and we're going to go through the salary cap, you know, swamp for 2 years and hope that we can get this turned around in that time. But really it's going to be hard to know where exactly his favorites are until next week sort of stacks up, and I think he would probably end up interviewing with maybe three or four teams. It might not even be three or four. It might be sort of a, you know, Andy Reid situation when he departed Philly and Kansas City, you know, swooped in and grabbed him immediately.
Okay. So, well, let me follow up then, because I hear what you're saying just on the, specifically on the Titans front, because I hear what you're saying on the things mapping out and sort of like, okay, these issues, how many candidates out there are scared away by the Titans and what has gone on in recent years with ownership, with the front office constantly changing what they are and this title and that title. And then also, is Cam Ward promising enough, at least for some people, to maybe overcome that?
Well, start with Cam. That's going to be in the eye of the beholder. You know, I mean, it's just you never know. Whatever, different coaches are going to look at him different ways, right?
Right.
And so I can't speak to what the candidate feel. You would literally have to go from one candidate to the next and just say, "Hey, give me your thoughts on," you know, go sit down, watch some Cam Ward tape, and tell me what you walk away thinking, and maybe go back to you did any work on him going into the draft. What did you think? And sort of get that assessment. You know, I think Cam acquitted himself well enough, particularly down the stretch in terms of the growth that he showed, that some people shouldn't be like alarmed. Oh no, this guy's, you know, not at all what we thought we were getting. But still, I think those assessments are really ultimately going to be important. Like, is when we've talked in the past about, like, when Sean McVay was brought in by the Rams, he looked at Jared Goff and said, yeah, I believe in that guy. I think I can coach that guy. Here's all these things I think I can do with him. And it worked for a while. And then when it didn't, you know, Sean was like, all right, we're making this change. It's not working anymore. So that, you know, that's something that could also be in play. But in terms of what, in terms of the candidates being scared away, I'll say it, like the ownership situation and how the turnover has gone over the, you know, last several years is troubling. Definitely. How things kind of dissolved between John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, how the Rand Carthen thing went, you know, who reports to who, how this is how the structure is going to look. And then, you know, a year later, it's like, no, this is how the structure is going to look. And, you know, I just think that's very few high-tier candidates with a lot of options are ultimately going to want to step into that kind of a situation. And I'm not going to lie, like, there are people who look at Mike Vrabel leaving and then ending up in New England with a roster that at the time looked pretty poor. I mean, there were a lot of questions. Now, they spent money, and it turns out that some of the pieces were better than I think we ultimately thought. But to have the success that he's had, even with a crap schedule, facing a crap schedule, I think that raises people's eyebrows. I think people are like, okay, that's not. And I told you then, we had this big fight back when you know, Vrabes went out the door. I told you guys, like, he is not, viewed as a really quality coach across the league by other coaches.
You did say he was going to get 2 first-round picks. I'm just saying.
Well, would he have been worth it?
Well, he probably would have been, I guess.
Probably would have been worth those 2 first-round picks for a team had they jumped on him and not given it up and given it up. But I think, you know, when someone gets fired from a team and coaches are like, what? Like, what? And I think if you're Baltimore, there's a little bit of that now. I think there's some coaches going, why didn't that work there? Like, what's did it? There's got to be some explanation for why John Harbaugh didn't work out in Baltimore. But they also have Lamar Jackson, which is an extremely enticing player, I think, for a certain, you know, set of coaches who want to go in and coach that kind of a quarterback. So I would say the track record is something that's going to hurt the Titans a little bit. How much? We'll see. It depends. I think you could probably some of the coordinators that I think they're looking at, like, you know, Robert Saleh has still managed to come out of the Jets, rehab his image, although I don't think it was really hurt as much with the Jets as people think, because people know what the Jets are. But a coordinator on the level of Saleh, I think, you know, the Titans could be in his wheelhouse. A Kevin Stefanski, I think the Titans could be in his wheelhouse. I think, you know, Stefanski is an interesting one because, you know, he was sort of the belle of the ball, and then John gets let go, and it's like, whoa, okay. There's a lot of big options here that we now are staring at when you're talking about other franchises.
Talking to Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. Charles, you kind of alluded to what I was going to ask you in terms of the guys the Titans are looking to interview, like Robert Saleh and Matt Nagy. When it comes to interviewing those guys, would it make sense for the Titans to go in with this dual mindset of, yes, we're looking at you for head coach, but we're also comfortable looking at you for a coordinator position?
Yeah, I mean, if it's coordinators who currently have jobs, you know, obviously they need to not have play calling duties. So, but yeah, if you're interviewing coordinators who don't have play calling that are currently on teams, yeah, absolutely. There's no question you keep that in the data bank. And in terms of the ones that, you know, don't have jobs, I mean, it's the same. I think it's the same setup. Yeah, you always, I think everybody goes into head coaching interviews and always, I would say almost every franchise thinks that way, that, hey, look, if we really like this, you know, candidate, but they turn out to not be what we think is the exact right fit for the head coaching spot. Is there, you know, some ability here to still get that, you know, individual onto the coaching staff of, you know, the next head coach, but the next head coach will also play a part in that, right? You know, if you're hiring an offensive head coach, and that offensive head coach says, well, no, I want play calling duties when I go in. Hard to then sell to another offensive coordinator that you're making a lateral move when the head coach coming in is starting off with play calling duties.
So Nagy apparently also interviewing with the Ravens per Ian here. So that's interesting. Okay, so let me boil that down, Charles, on the Titans front. There's a lot of, I think, presumption with Nagy here, because of the history with Mike Borgonzi,
yeah.
You know, so, and he was the first guy announced and all that stuff. And so I think, I mean, some people, of course, the Titans last week announced, like, Borgonzi has full control and they've switched it up again. And we don't even have time to get into all that. But some people were like, oh, so Nagy's going to be the guy, which I didn't necessarily buy. I mean, I think obviously he knows more about him than our candidates, but this is Mike Borgonzi's job. So I think he's going to do his due diligence. But if it were you, knowing what you know about Nagy, because I hear from Chicago people, oh, my God, you guys have no idea. It was such a bleep show. Yeah, the first year, you know, coach of the year, and then it went downhill so bad you do not want anything to do with this guy. And even from some media who cover the Bears. And then you have Stefanski, and I want to make sure we hit some Cleveland stuff so we can get you on Cleveland radio today. If you were looking at those two guys, just those two, because I do feel like you know, that, like you said, I mean, those are obviously, like, I think real possibilities to the Titans. Who would you prefer based on all that you know about those two guys?
I think I would lean more into Kevin Stefanski. Only because I know, look, it was rough, you know, for Nagy in Chicago. Now, that said, you know, you go 12-4. They weren't all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't a situation where it's like, oh, 3-13 the next year. I mean, they went 8-8 the next two seasons. They definitely underachieved. And I also think that was part of the frustration down the stretch for the fan base, where it's like, hey, we're 12-4, and you're thinking, this is it. We got our, you know, we got the coach in the fold who's going to take us somewhere. You lose your playoff game, and then next thing you know, you're 8-8. And I think people forget the 2020 season. They were 8-8 and went in the playoffs again. Also lose that one. But I think a lot of that was just frustration that Nagy, you know, again, quarterback spot was very, very underwhelming. And a lot of people thought, oh, Nagy's going to come in here and this is going to be like, you know, the Chiefs. It's going to be like a Chiefs setup, and we're going to have that. Well, it's pretty unrealistic. But that said, I look at Stefanski, and I just think Kevin was in the middle of a mess constantly, you know, in Cleveland. And I think he did really well when you go back and you look at when Baker was healthy. And I think had Baker not had the highs and lows and then the health issue prior to them moving on from him, I think there's a chance that they put that all together there, and Baker's still there, and this is a whole different conversation, and they don't chase Deshaun Watson. Then I think he fell prey to, once the Deshaun Watson decision was made, and I don't think he had any issue coaching Deshaun Watson. I think he was on the same page as Andrew Berry and everybody else in the organization being excited about it. I don't think he realized kind of what was happening with Deshaun. I don't, you know, emotionally, physically, like what's going on in the field. It was just immediately the struggle was a little bit stunning. And then, unfortunately, they got to the point where a couple years in, if the contract had been done the way I think people in the building wanted it done, and it was not done this way because of ownership, there would have been, okay, we can cut him. Like he's going to get, you know, 3 years of guaranteed money out of us. We get past year two, and this is extremely concerning, and it looks like it's not going to work. We could potentially cut them, you know, before year three, and we'll split that hit. You know, we'll do a post June, and it'll hurt. But there was just never that trapdoor to really get out of it. Plus, they started, you know, taking money out of Deshaun's contract and spreading it down the line so that they can continue to sign, you know, players in free agency. I think he had a lot of bad luck, you know, from an injury standpoint. I think the same for Andrew Berry, had a lot of bad luck, you know, probably would have liked to go a different way with the Deshaun situation when it came terms to how the contract was done and whether he would have been cuttable. But I think, look, when they've been healthy and they've gotten some good quarterback play, Kevin's won Coach of the Year. I know some people don't care about Coach of the Year, but it does matter. He also went to Pittsburgh and won a playoff game for Cleveland. Okay. Like there's stuff there. And when you talk to people around the league about Kevin as well, there's still a very high opinion of him, even through everything that's gone on. It reminds me a little bit of Saleh, you know, coming out of the Jets. There's still a high opinion of Saleh coming out of there, with most people looking at the backdrop of the franchise he was in and saying, okay, we can see a lot of the downside here and what you had to deal with. I think, you know, Kevin gets the same sort of, I don't want to say a mulligan, but he certainly gets some grace when it comes to what was going on in the organization. I also think people know this season in particular, I think he wanted Flacco there longer than he was. You know, I think that was, he wanted to try to compete with a veteran longer than ultimately they did. And for whatever reason, that decision went the other way, and he had to make the best of it.
Charles, in terms of teams currently in the playoffs, I think there are a couple of teams competing that, I wouldn't say their coach is necessarily on the hot seat, but they can quickly dive into that and maybe even make a move, like the Packers or even the Bills. If that's the case, and let's say the Packers decide to move on from LaFleur, or the Bills decide to move on, are there guys out there, I know you said you're not situational in terms of coaching searches, but Are there guys out there you think would make sense for those teams?
For the Packers and the Bills?
Yeah, just for those as examples.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bills, if you ask me, like, oh, you know, give me the John Harbaugh potential landing spots, I would say the Giants are very much there, and I would say that I think the Bills, that's another team where it's sort of like waiting to see what happens. Like, you know, Sean McDermott obviously has a good record, but he's, what is he, like 0-5 on the road in the playoffs, and that's rough. If he goes 0-6, and you're sitting there and you're going, you know, Josh Allen wasn't MVP this year, but he had a really damn good year. How long are we going to, you know, continue to squander this? We need to make a change, and we need to go get someone who can walk right in, that is, you know, turn the key as a culture guy, coaches tough. So I would think that Buffalo, if they were to make a change, I think that Harbaugh might be the only guy, frankly.
Harbaugh and Monken, right? I mean, obviously Monken did pretty...
Monken would go.
Yeah. Good stuff with Lamar. I mean, I think he would do some good stuff with Josh Allen.
Well, not only that, I think some of the frustration inside the franchise this year for Baltimore was Lamar and Todd. So, you know, I don't know that Todd is sticking around with the Ravens, and I would presume, yeah, that where John goes, Monken would go as well. And yeah, I think that's actually a pretty good fit. Packers, I'm less, you know, certain of who would ultimately end up in that spot. And I think that's, you know, it's partially because you don't have an owner of the team. So it's always like, what does the search look like? You know, who's really being, like, is Brian Gutekunst going to be the person who ultimately taps that next head coach? You know, I personally think Matt, even if they lose, let's say, you know, they don't advance, they lose their first game, I still think Matt gets another year. I think, you know, given the concussion late with Love, some of the things we saw with Malik Willis when he got on the field, the way they were playing when Micah Parsons went down, it's just hard for me to believe the organization sits there and goes, man, it was all Matt, you know, it was Matt LaFleur's problem. So what? We lost clearly our best defensive player who made a world of difference on our defense. So what? We had, you know, injuries over the course of the season, not massive injuries to Jordan Love, but things that lingered and bothered him and I think suppressed some of the performance. So what? Malik Willis got on the field and looked amazing. You know, like does that not go? That's a favorable thing on his ledger that he had a backup quarterback that he could win games with. So, you know, I think it's we'll see in Green Bay. I know Rossi hates that, but
no, he's full. He thinks he's getting an extension, so he's absolutely miserable about it. Talking to Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. Last thing for you, Charles. I kind of go shifting back to the Titans and another guy who people are talking about is Cliff Kingsbury, which to me is one of those interview him as a head coach, you know, and then obviously, you know, the OC thing maybe materializes like it did with Matt LaFleur when they hired Vrabel. But I'm just wondering on the Washington front, I look at that situation. It's like, you know, last year he was the toast of the town and Jaden Daniels is healthy. And it's right. hard to look at that and not say he did a heck of a job with a admittedly talented rookie quarterback, but a team that signed a bunch of short-term free agents. And I just thought he was a big part of the success. This year, it's mostly Marcus Mariota playing quarterback and Kingsbury gets blamed. Is there something more to that than just looking for a scapegoat because things didn't go well this year?
Well, I would ask, so I think the question there is, how much did the injuries, and you can make a very strong argument that they were the root of it all, how much did injuries really impact the offensive fade in Washington? And I think what you're worried about is when Cliff was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, there were definitely some highs, but you would see seasons would get undone because they would just fade. The second half of seasons, you'd be like, what is going on? Why did they fade down the stretch? And you know, once he was out of Arizona and replaced by Jonathan Gannon and Monty Austinford as the general manager, you heard from players like immediately, like, yeah, man, it was a little bit of a country club, atmosphere previously. Like, there was definitely some things that were, you know, sliding that are absolutely not sliding now. And, I mean, you can argue, you can say, well, geez, it's manifested in nothing. You know, the change is really for the Cardinals, and they've fired their head coach, so maybe Cliff wasn't the problem there either. But, I think, look, when Jaden Daniels was healthy, the running back, and again, too, that's another thing I think you should notice about Cliff and Washington. They still need pieces. Like, they weren't done. They weren't, like, a finished – I it was crazy because I went through there in preseason and I was in camp and I was talking to one of their executives and I said, man, I think the worst thing that happened to you was going to the NFC title. And he looked at me like, I think he's going to punch me. Like, it was just, he did not like that. And I said, you know, just hear me out. I think your guys played over their head, you know, which is great. It's awesome, you know, that the coaching staff could raise the level of play, that Jaden Daniels could spark the team and cover up for some things. But, you know, and I just straight up said to him, I said, I think this year's going to be, you know, a little more difficult because some of those things can't always be covered up. And that's, I think, what you ultimately saw. And I think, you know, Cliff and the offense suffered from some of that too. They didn't have a real dominant running back. You're still counting on Zach Ertz as your tight end. And frankly, you know, is he producing? Yes. But You spent a second-round pick on Ben Sinnott, and who, you know, came into the league with an offensive repertoire that was really impressive in college, and you're like, they don't even – it was like buried. It was like, you're not even going to try with this guy? You're not going to try to develop him at all? The wide receivers were very, very underwhelming other than Terry McLaurin, which is part of the reason why Terry McLaurin had the leverage that he had coming into the season, was because, you know, James and me throwing to a bunch of really second, third, fourth string guys. And then ultimately the Jaden Daniels injury, you know, I almost wonder if inside the organization there was a little bit of a, could we have protected him a little bit better over the course of the season and maybe not have him replicating some of the off-script runs, you know, RPO things where he was putting it on his shoulders. Maybe that's what helped to contribute to him getting injured. I don't know how much of that gets put on Cliff. I think Cliff's talented. I think worst case scenario, he ends up as another quarterback's coach. Maybe he ends up as a college coach. I think if he sticks in the NFL, he will end up being an OC again. I don't know if he'll be right out of the box, but I don't think his career's done from a coordinator position.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. As always, we thank you. Get some rest. Big weekend ahead.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one. And tell Robbie I hope he feels better.
Sounds good. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. When we come back, we will react to Charles. And we have three new names that are official for the Titans coaching interview process. We'll get into that, too. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5 The Game. The Game, Nashville Sports Network. Let me try that again. On Rubby and Rex Road, the Game Nashville Sports Network is your home for college football playoff. Tonight, following the Vanderbilt women's basketball game on 94.9 The Fan, catch number 10 Miami against number 6 Ole Miss in the Fiesta Bowl. It's a semifinal. College football playoff coverage on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Welcome back into Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road here, Connor Newt in for Robbie, Ian Safar producing. Good segment there with Charles Robinson. Let's go to the Titans coaching search because we have three new names. And I don't see who got this, you know, who came in first on this by a second or
I think
two.
Maybe Paul might have.
Did PK?
I think he might have.
Did he scoop Rappaport and Schefter on this?
They were all really pretty close. I think I saw Paul's first, and then I saw Rap Sheet, and then I saw Schefter.
Let's give credit to Paul. He's a fragile baby man, so we want to make sure that, you know, that Paul gets his credit.
He saves babies.
And he's a man baby baby man who also has blood for babies. Good job, Paul. His three candidates he's reporting that the Titans request interviews with: Arthur Smith, no surprise; Robert Saleh, no surprise; and Jeff Hafley, who I think also is intriguing. I think Jeff Hafley is intriguing. He's been a college head coach. He's been around. He's a very good DC in the NFL with Robbie's Packers. Robbie has talked about him a little bit. So those are all good. Those all make sense to me. We've talked very little about Arthur Smith. Where do you come down, Connor, on Arthur Smith?
Arthur Smith to me is one of those coaches that I think is just better off as a coordinator than a head coach. I think the appeal with him coming here is just because he knows the system. He knows what Amy Adams Strunk is like, and he knows how this locker room functions. I think that's kind of just the main appeal, is bringing back a familiar face. I don't think there's any really big chance of him being the head coach. I don't think it makes sense. But, I mean, there are pros to it. He's been a head coach before. He didn't really get an opportunity with a quarterback in his time in Atlanta. It was with Desmond Ridder, and I think that was mainly the front office and ownership telling him, you're riding with Desmond Ridder because that's the guy we drafted. But he doesn't stick out to me like Robert Saleh does or Matt Nagy does or guys like that. I wouldn't hate it, but I wouldn't be head over heels for it.
Yeah, well, look, I'm with you. I don't know if Arthur Smith is going to be a successful head coach at some point. I think he could. It was, you know, kind of underwhelming, although head coaches at Atlanta are kind of underwhelming, and, yeah, and it's not just on them. But, yeah, the whole nose, Amy, you know, that's to me just a very overrated factor. I think if you can get – just try to get someone you think is better, who has demonstrated that he would be better as a head coach, and I think there are better candidates out there than Arthur Smith. I think it's that simple. Adam in Portland on the phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, how you doing, buddy?
Yo, what's up, man? Hey, man. Oh, by the way, you're doing a good job in the driver's seat today. You know,
thank you.
I always like Connor with you. That's this is a problem I got with this whole situation. Is I don't trust myself with these coaching search, like my feelings on the coaching search stuff, because I can remember when Heupel got hired in Tennessee being real upset about that, and I think he's a great coach. And I was one of those guys that's like, oh my God, he sucks. We got somebody from a small school that, you know, whatever. So I don't know. I just don't want Jason Garrett, and I don't want Mike McCoy. Other than that, it's fine. Like, I don't even know why they're interviewing those guys. I think it's weird, but just don't give me those names. I think it's going to be Nagy. I think everybody thinks it's going to be Nagy. But it's still disappointing that we can't get somebody like Harbaugh to take us more seriously, which I don't think he is, but I just don't want it to be those other two.
Thank you, Adam. And by the way, I 100% endorse that opinion. I mean, I think we could all agree together on that, right? I mean, obviously Mike McCoy, he's getting a courtesy interview. Like, it's funny because it makes Paul mad, but whatever.
Yeah.
Jason Garrett, I'm viewing that as a hopeful courtesy interview too, because like
Lord
Bergonzi's brother coach under, I can't get there. So I'm with Adam on that. And yeah, I agree with the sentiment. It's just, yeah, we're wrong so often on so many things. These GMs, these owners, these coaches are wrong on so many things. They're wrong on players so often. And people, you just don't, we always look at coaches, Connor, kind of like in a vacuum, in terms of like, what is this coach? What has this coach done? You know, what would this coach do here? But really, it's so much of it is people and how they mesh together and collaborate. Sorry to use that word, but it's true. It's like, if you have to have people who can work together well and play off each other and they can maximize each other's strengths. And it's sometimes you just don't know how that is all going to work together until you. So it's coach, GM, and quarterback, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to say, players and coaches alike. You want that relationship between player and coach. And especially when you're trying to develop a quarterback, you just took it number one overall. That's probably one of the most important factors in finding your next coach.
So I will say, today, I think I have shifted a little bit. And I'm excited that they're interviewing Saleh. But I think I'm drifting toward Team Stefanski. I think I might be drifting toward Team Stefanski.
Charles made a pretty good argument this past segment.
He did, and it's just, you think about how bad that organization is. And
go through the list of coaches they've hired.
You guys are talking about the list of coaches they've had
since they've come back as the Browns.
And to do what he did
there. It's hardcore.
Yeah, to do what he did there. Now, look, they've done a good job. They did a good job of building up a defensive roster. They've done some good stuff. To bring in players. They have the best defensive player in the world right now. But, yeah, like Charles said, even with Flacco, just quarterbacking, they were winning. And I think he's respected, and he seems to have a good demeanor and be able to navigate through a lot of stuff. I mean, like here, you know, Joe Flacco on the on the YouTube chat says Stefanski ruined Baker. I mean, Baker got hurt. So could you argue, like, should they have not played him? That's fine. There's also sometimes – Baker is the type of player who is going to be hard to keep off the field, right? Yeah. Now, look, you're the coach, so that's fine, but I don't know. I don't buy that. I don't buy that he, quote-unquote, ruined him. He's not ruined. He's a good quarterback. He got to another place, and obviously the Browns regret that. But I think I'm Team Stefanski from now on.
I mean, I always liked Stefanski. I just like Sala. But I would be very happy if they hired Stefanski. It would make sense. He's a former head coach. Obviously, we know where he came from. He's capable of leading a historically bad franchise to some victory. So I would be 100% on board with Stefanski.
Yeah, and then you got the play caller. You don't have to worry about, you know, losing the OC thing, and I think that could work out. All right, last segment coming up, Robbie and Rex. So grab bag, whatever you want to run into. I've got some texts that are, you know, bothering me that I'll have to yell at people about. We'll get that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Final segment, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt filled in admirably today for Robbie.
Rubby.
Not Rubby. You filled in admirably today. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. It's been fun. You'll be back. Well, you'll be back running the late shift tonight, huh?
A nice nap is in my future.
Yes.
Today.
All right, so we need to talk Ole Miss-Miami, which is, of course, a national semifinal tonight. I did want to – I'm not even going to get into, like, the games are fixed stuff today on the text. I think people are just messing with me and trolling me. But someone said that, like, there was a graphic in the Eagles-Saints game on TV that said, like, Eagles take first lead or something, and then the Eagles scored two plays later, which proves that, like, I guess it's all scripted. I want to know, like – what kind of fan the NFL got to blow hard from, like, one side so that Tyler Loop kick went whew, and just veered to the right. That is amazing scripting and fixing of games.
They said, all right, Tyler, we want you to kick it straight,
yeah,
but somehow make it loop.
Yeah.
That way the emotion of
loop.
The fan is played on. Yeah, loop it.
Exactly.
Loop the kick, loop.
That is playing to the script, my friend. So, now this is an oldie but a goodie real quick, but someone texts in, Vrabel tanked to get fired. It's so obvious in retrospect. So then I said, okay, yeah, I'm giving you a large eye roll. And then they responded with the quote, enjoy it. It ain't like this everywhere, end quote. He wanted out, and I really don't blame him knowing what we know now. So, again, I want to make sure I have this right. So he tanked so that he could not get the Pats job, which went to Gerard Mayo, and that he could not get the Chargers job, which he absolutely wanted, which he finished second to Jim Harbaugh for that job. That's he tanked. Mike Vrabel, again, go back to the presser where he's like, it sucks, Gentry. Losing sucks. I mean, Mike Vrabel never wants to lose a football game ever in his life. It tears at his soul. These are the level of competitors we're talking about here. He's as much of one as anyone. So, no, he did not tank. Now, did he by the end, was he like, okay, I can see the writing on the wall. I'm sick of this place. I'm sick of Amy. Sure. But tanked, I mean, it's just like, yeah. Let's use our brains. Let's try to use our brains. All right. Or if you're just trolling me, good job. It worked again. All right, the game tonight, Connor. What are we looking for? Who do you like?
It's such a toss-up because I heard Jake say this yesterday, and I completely agree. I think Ole Miss has to play their best game to beat Miami tonight, and I don't think Miami needs to play their best game to beat Ole Miss tonight. That said, the chip on the shoulder of Ole Miss right now, I think it's tough to beat them. I think they're playing with such swagger and such poise and such drive just to stick it to that guy out in LSU now that I can't bet against them. I honestly am going to take Ole Miss to beat Miami tonight.
I think I am too, as much as I'm so impressed. What Miami did to Ohio State was impressive. And Miami early in the year, I'm like, they might be the best team, man,
yeah,
with what they have with their defensive front. But I do think that Ole Miss's scheme can neutralize that a little bit. Is Trinidad – who's playing better than Trinidad Chambliss?
No one.
The way he played against Georgia was incredible.
Right.
I'm watching him all year, and I'm watching that game, and it's like, again, that's – maybe we missed it. Like, he should have been in New York. Like, you know, and there was some talk of him, but he didn't really get much momentum for that. He was unbelievable. So I'm with you. I think I like Ole Miss. But, you know, Carson Beck, I mean, that's a big question. You know, I thought he did a good job in the last game. He did what you needed to do. I think he's going to need to do a little more than that to win this game. And I think he's capable. And Malachi Toney is incredible.
Yeah.
And, like, they could do it.
True freshman.
But Oh, he's unbelievable. But I think I have more belief in Ole Miss and Chambliss right now. And I'll just Pete Golden the whole thing. Who's America's team? Is it Ole Miss or is it Indiana?
I mean, what would happen if that's the national championship? The country will be split. I think it's Indiana still, just because of long-term storytelling. They went from quite literally the worst FBS team in history to now they're national contenders and the number one seed in the college football playoff. I think it's still Indiana, but the storyline for Ole Miss has been so much fun to watch, and it's hard to bet against either team. It's certainly a toss-up.
Yeah, I think I'd lean Ole Miss just because I think it's crazy to say this because it's been less than two full seasons, but I think people are actually starting to get, like, sick of – like, oh, God, that boring national power Indiana, Kurt Cignetti. You know, I mean, you're right. It's absolutely absurd. They are now – they're only the second losing – they were the losingest team.
They're second now.
Northwestern has passed them again. They're in a hell of a battle with Northwestern with the most losses of all time. But I like what they did to Bama and just Cignetti and everything. I think some people are like, no, I don't want them to win.
Yeah.
And look, Oregon, by the way, is a heck of a story because Oregon, I think, is the best program to never have won a national championship. And by the way, I mean, we're going to talk about this tomorrow on the show, but I think Oregon has a good chance to beat Indiana.
Yeah.
And if they don't, I think Indiana's going to win the whole thing.
I think the winner of that game is the national champion.
Okay.
I think Oregon is capable of beating Indiana. I think you add the factor that Indiana beat them earlier in the season, there's a revenge factor in there. And I think they have the talent to do it. But I do think whoever wins that game is going to be favored and is probably better than whoever comes out of the game tonight.
Like, we kind of found out this year that Indiana was different, was a clear step above last year's team when they went out to Oregon and took it to them. And, you know, again, like Indiana in the trenches is just – they are that good. So, but tonight, Ole Miss, Miami, should be a great one. Vandy women's game, of course. Jake Lyman coming up here with Next Man Up, and he's got the call on that tonight. Lots of great stuff going on. Thanks, Connor Newt.
Thank you,
Next Man Up is next, 102.5 The Game.